Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. Are you hypoglycemic? Is that why you suddenly needed food sustenance?
I think I am. I am at the mercy of my blood sugar in a way that I have not been in.
Okay, aren't we all at the mercy of our blood sugar? Like you said earlier before we started recording, doesn't everything involve your colon?
My colon is probably the most important thing about my daily existence.
You know you're getting old when your gastrointestinal tract activity defines your... Soon you'll be singing songs about Charlie's colon. Whoa!
Someone was telling me that they felt old recently, and the reason they felt old is because some band they liked had released a new album or something like that, and I said, no, you're not old.
Wait, they're not old because a band they liked from...
Here's the thing.
From the nether yeah.
Their discussion of what made them old was about, you know, cultural touch points as opposed to the decline of their body and the hardening of their soul.
Whereas we use all three to define our current bitter and angry states.
we had fun with melancholy this morning, didn't we? We had fun with anger and...
We did, but yet we did not manage to slip in the utter depths of depression to the point where you question your whole existence.
Are you raging against the dying of the light?
No. Yeah, I am, but I haven't just fallen into the pit. Somehow your bizarre ramblings in the morning have lifted me up to the light of day.
I'm so glad to be of service.
Okay, let me tell you this, and this is maybe one thing as a scientist I like about the humanities. Why don't we talk like that anymore? One of my Okay, so let me give you an example. One of my favorite movies is True Grit, because I'm a big John Wayne fan. But if you actually look at John Wayne, he was a very one-dimensional character. I can't blame him for this. I mean, they wrote parts where he's like...
You're saying John Wayne as a whole? John Wayne as
a
movie star?
No, as a person, I'm sure he's a fascinating guy, actually.
So John Wayne as a movie star...
Well, he was the
Didn't he do a bunch of stuff at the end of his career to try and shake that?
Well, so now you're taking me into a segue to his last film, I believe.
The Shootist.
The Shootist. An excellent film because it had a real story and real characters. And it's the story you never hear. You know, he always played the guy who'd walk in, Jacob McCandles, I thought you were dead. Not hardly. You know, he was that big guy with the guns a-blazing. And, okay... Can I say sometimes we just like that? What do humanities people believe about?
Of course, you can say that.
Let's think about films like I don't know whether it's some of the John Wayne films where he's just the hero, or you know, or things that are just fun. Let me take an example: Guardians of the Galaxies, Galaxy, Guardian of the Galaxy,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Galaxy. Have you seen
multiple Guardians? Single
one Galaxy.
No, I have a small child. No, I know. I don't watch movies anymore.
Oh, that's true. You don't. So I have a rather large child who's 14 years old.
When it comes on Netflix, I am going to watch the ever-living hell out of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, so you are. But, I mean, I think I can say...
I'm a big fan of Chris Pratt. I like his work.
What else do you like about Chris
Doughy
Pratt?
Doughy or fit, I like Chris Pratt a lot.
Oh, so whether he's in shape or chunky, you like him, by the way.
Do you know Parks and Rec?
I do, but to be honest, he got his start on
Our media criticism podcast is terrible. We should really just talk about the bald guys conversing.
He got his start on a show called Everwood, where he played the petulant older son
physician. I don't care.
He was actually quite good.
As far as I'm concerned, Andy Dwyer...
Is Chris Pratt.
...escaped from Pawnee, Indiana, got fit, and now stars in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. But... I think I could say without fear of disagreement from most scholars, it is not a genre-defining film.
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just plain fun. It's fun. It's funny.
As well it should be.
I went with my teenage son because he wanted to see it. Chris Pratt was great. Whoever played the raccoon was really good.
Bradley Cooper did the voice
did
of
he do the voice yeah. of the raccoon? Well, Bradley Cooper's a very good actor.
So let's stop here.
No, let's not.
No. Let's stop here because you wanted to talk about True Grit.
Yeah.
And when you said, what about just characters who, just heroes who just pull out the guns blazing? So you went to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Because I just wanted to see a fun movie.
But from what I understand, everyone in the Guardians of the Galaxy is a flawed person with a deep drive to try and right a wrong.
Seriously, fraud. Flawed.
Seriously, fraud.
Reminds me of that commercial. Do you have frog protection? No, fraud protection.
But when you think, you know, talk about heroes and narrative. Mm-hmm. Someone who is so badass that they just, like Superman, right?
Yeah, they're so bad. But even Superman is portrayed with flaws and limitations.
And they are mental, right? They're, you know, he is
unless
conflicted.
Kryptonite is around, then he's hosed.
Well, yeah, but even that, that's a special thing. I mean, Superman's big deal is that he's conflicted about being the protector of a world that he never made.
Right.
That he's not part of.
Tough position. Sticky wicket.
Yeah, glad I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. I agree with that. But I think it's okay to want to read books and
Die Hard, watch
movies.
Is one of the best movies ever made. It is, in fact, better than Citizen Kane.
Okay, this is for all the library people out there, the Muttley laugh.
Do you
really
know why?
Why is Die Hard better?
Because Bruce Willis doesn't have shoes on. Because he gets a little scared. He gets a little sad in the middle. He's afraid he's going to die.
And he's scrunching his toes in the carpet because he doesn't like jet lag. And who does?
His feet are filled with glass at one point. He's beaten up. He doesn't get everything right. He's doing his best. Our hero.
It's like something out of Homer.
Simpson?
No, The Odyssey.
A Homeric poem?
Yes. An epic poem.
Exactly. Die Hard is great because he's just a guy. Mm-hmm. Who manages to do it, as opposed to many movies that are like, oh, look, it's Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I'm choosing those two because that's the triumvirate, you know, Bruce Willis,
yeah.
Sylvester Stallone, although no longer Arnold Schwarzenegger. They have parted ways, I think. Bruce Willis pissed somebody off. I don't know. But those are right-wing action heroes who defined much of the 80s.
Yeah. I will admit, Die Hard was a good film.
Die Hard is a great film.
Wow. I feel vindicated that if a librarian would
say
such a thing.
Die Hard is the best.
Well, it has great character development, right? The cop.
It's great everything.
Who was played by the guy from, what's the one?
The
with
show.
The nerdy guy.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. All those people.
The limo driver in the basement
the
was hilarious.
The histories that all of our characters bring, you know, all of our actors bring to their characters. Even the journalist who sucks, you know? Even Huey Lewis.
Oh, no, but he's great. Right? The journalist who sucks was great. Wait, Huey Lewis was in the
film?
He's
not, but there's a guy who looks just like Huey Lewis, who's one of the bad guys. He's one of
the. Oh, there is. There's a guy.
He takes over the security
at the front
guard
desk.
Position,
yeah,
and he looks like, you know.
But, of course, so what film was Huey Lewis
yourself.
In?
Shortcuts. And Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
I'm sorry.
On the megaphone.
I'm sorry.
You're just too darn loud.
So
the irony
an
is
invulnerable hero. Is uninteresting.
Yes. Agreed.
You know, a flawed hero, someone who is having trouble.
Yeah. All the great stories about heroes had flawed heroes,
and
realistic
so
heroes.
What were John Wayne's flaws in the movies that were really good?
Well, in The Shootist.
Why wasn't he in Die Hard is really my question.
I believe he was dead. I believe he had already died.
Not an excuse.
Hard. But in The Shootist, he was a man suffering from cancer.
I
want
to hear you talk about True Grit, though.
Well, so True Grit, the first one, I liked it because I like John Wayne.
The first one, meaning not the remake with Jeff Bridges.
Bridges. But I actually like the Jeff Bridges one better.
I adore that movie.
Yes, it's such a good movie because it shows them as flawed human beings.
From what
although,
I understand, it's
actually,
much more true to the book.
Yeah, and actually, he was quite flawed. He was quite of a sloppy drug jerkwad in the first one, too. So actually, that wasn't a bad portrayal by John Wayne. And I can't blame John Wayne because John Wayne was told by the studios, this is who you are. This is what you're doing.
Yeah, right? There's a lot more of, you know, you got to sell
right.
who you are as much as
yeah,
what the movie is.
And, you know, so we think that actors just get to choose everything. No, they have some input, but it's often very limited. And that is illustrated by the interesting video that's now out on the internet machine with Sir Ian McClelland.
Do you mean
and
the
Ricky.
Information tube?
The information tube. The tube of information. Sir
McClellan.
Ian McClelland and Ricky Gervais. Have
Is
you seen
McKellen
this?
McKellen or McClellan?
I don't even know.
We should have looked this up.
You shall not pass.
But you know what this podcast does?
Just ramble on
no preparation. That's what we do.
Sometimes we do. We just didn't today.
Not ever. Don't lie to the people.
We do more preparation than my former co-host Bill Hunt used to do on Inside the Black Box.
Bill made sure to not know what was going on.
He did that purposely, and that's what made it magic.
I'm sorry.
But there's this great video.
Sorry you lost the magic.
To our listeners.
I hear it happens to guys in their 40s.
Look up Sir Ian McClellan or McClelland or
McKellen.
Whatever. McKellen. The guy who played Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings movies, and Ricky Gervais. And look up this video, and he talks about the secret to acting. He's just sitting there going, so they called me up to play this wizard. I said, you do know I'm not actually a wizard. Here's how I do it. I pretend as though I'm the wizard. And then they say in the lines, as though I'm the wizard. So it kind of goes like this. It's Sir Ian, Sir Ian, Sir Ian. Then you shall not pass. Then Sir Ian, Sir Ian, Sir Ian. And he goes, and how do I know what to say? The lines are written down. How do I know where to stand? Somebody tells me.
So I heard recently Eli Roth describe filming The Green Inferno, which is a movie that he made.
Is this an adult film, The Green Inferno?
It's not, although I think there's a little bit of a joke.
It came after Behind the Green Door.
Long after The Green Door. No, it's not out yet because the distribution rights, blah, 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 something, something, and who cares?
Okay, The Green Inferno. Does this have something to do with nasal flow?
If you'll let me tell you.
Okay.
Pete, stop. Let me tell you. Pete, what are you doing? Please, stop, Pete.
I'm looking to see if I finished my iced tea this morning. I have.
The Green Inferno is a horror movie. Horror movie.
Gesundheit.
It's a gross movie. It's about cannibalism.
Mm.
And they filmed it way down Amazon way.
Okay. Do they have that now? Way down Amazon way, where we sit in the seersucker suits and drink mint juleps.
They went into the area where...
there is reputedly cannibalism?
Werner Herzog filmed Aguirre, Wrath of God with Klaus Kinski.
Okay.
And I believe that that's the movie where Kinski said, I'm going to leave this film, and Herzog said, I'm going to go get a rifle, and if you leave, I'm going to shoot you and then shoot myself.
Right, so although Sir Ian makes a good point
that
then.
That could have been Fitzcarraldo.
Okay, if you say so.
So he went up the river, and Eli Roth made a point. All of this was on a Doug Loves Movies recently. That's where I learned this.
Okay.
Eli Roth.
So the lesson is everything can be learned through the movies.
The podcasts. He was going up the river, and they said, this is where Herzog went to do Aguirre, Wrath of God, and it was right about here. And he said, well, we're going to go farther up the river, so I can say, farther than Herzog!
He made a dramatic gesture at that point. It was...
They found a village, Peru, so Peruvians, who did not know what movies were, and they had to conceptually explain to them what a movie was, mm-hmm. what they would do. We're going to ask you to pretend to do things.
Oh, kind of like Ian was saying.
And we're going to make it so that people can see elsewhere.
But they must understand acting and drama and theater. Well, don't all cultures have that?
It wasn't some kind of bullshit sort of who would lie? Why would we change? You know, like it wasn't the native who is so precise and honest. It was just like, look, we're going to pretend, and then we're going to make a record of that pretending.
Mm-hmm.
And they dove right in, and they offered them a baby at the end of the shoot as a gift.
No, is this for real or is this in the movie?
This is real.
And are we judging them for giving up their firstborn, or?
I'm just describing an astonishing thing.
That is astonishing.
Here's also what was
probably very normal to them, though.
This is my favorite story of Eli Roth's stories.
Whereas your ultimate gift would be a vinyl record.
Doug Benson. Here's my copy of Inner Visions by Stevie Wonder. It's got a scratch on it, but it's a really important scratch. They were preparing to shoot a scene where the villagers came out of the jungle and grabbed the Christian missionaries whose plane had crashed in the Amazon jungle.
Prepare them with béarnaise sauce.
Well, you know, and they had heads on spikes, and because it's like cannibals, right? And as they were getting ready to do that, a boat came up the river with a bunch of Christian missionaries reading the Bible into big speakers on top of the boat, trying to convert These villagers.
This in the 21st century.
For real. That happened when they were getting ready to film the movie for fake with lines that were written down and people pretending to be things. And the missionaries then saw these, like, painted up natives.
Did they get
with
freaked
heads.
Out?
Everybody lost their shit.
But I mean, well, the film crew was probably laughing their butts off, but.
Well, I think there's a certain amount of, oh, crap, there goes $20,000.
Yeah.
You know, a minute.
But that does happen in filming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that to say, I would have liked to have been there when they were explaining movies to people who didn't know what movies were.
Yeah, I bet.
Because it is kind of magical to take it down. Because you're not saying, well, Transformers 4, that's not good cinema. You're saying what we're going to do is the way we're going to tell a story is instead of having someone tell a story and then you think of it, mm-hmm. we're going to pretend that the story is
happening.
Reenact
it.
Yeah. And then we are going to put that into a machine. I don't even know if technology. You know, this was a quickly told story on a podcast, so I don't have the details. I would like to have seen what's the level where you had to explain the concept? What's the level where you could no longer explain the concept and had to say, and like magic, it will, you know?
But I mean, there was a great Murphy's Law. I saw on a poster when I was in graduate school that basically said any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
That's an Arthur C. Clarke quote.
It is actually. Yeah, we did point that out. So somebody put that on a poster that you could buy at the Harvard Coop in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But I think disruptive technology, when it first comes out, it just seems like magic or just seems so strange.
So what do you think is disruptive technology? Like what does that mean to you? That's a buzzword. So what does that mean to
you
as a person?
It's technology that disrupts the status quo, the way we do things. For example, your smartphone is disruptive technology.
What's the difference between something that changes or makes something easier than compared to disruptive?
So disruptive just means it's a big change. That's my opinion. It's a big change. Hopefully it's a big change for the better.
Sliced bread disruptive?
People use that as the canonical example of disruptive technology.
Right. That's why I brought it up.
I don't think so. I think it was an incremental change.
What about the bread machine?
How many bread machines did you get for your wedding?
What about Pepperidge Farm 9-grain bread? Was that disruptive?
Of course it was, because Pepperidge Farm remembers. Disruptive technology, in my opinion.
iPhone? That's you're going to toss the iPhone?
Well, let's not give Apple credit for everything. They do some good stuff, but they're not the only people out there. They certainly have good branding, though, don't they?
They do, because that's what I think of.
Yeah.
I always think Samsung is just like working it out. Even though
Samsung,
they're on top of things,
a lot of the Droid phones, the Microsoft phones are excellent.
What I can't take seriously.
What?
Droid. I just can't.
Yeah, that's bad marketing.
It's really bad.
I think we've all agreed the robot voice is passé. Well, it didn't work on the Cylons for Battlestar Galactica.
When a person can't turn a Droid phone off and it's going, Droid, help, I'm a Droid, someone please, Droid.
You want, what's the name of the nice lady on the iPhone? You want?
Oh, God, Siri?
Siri.
No.
You don't like Siri?
No.
Why not?
Siri sucks.
Why?
Siri. I'd like to find a movie theater. I'm sorry. There's no movie theater on the web.
Oh, I'm talking about her voice.
Holy fuck, Siri. How about AMC theaters? There's an AMC down the road, Charlie. What would you like to see? Would you like to see the new film by the person you don't care about?
I will say this, that I like the guy that talks back to me on my Droid phone, but he's not a pretty as a voice.
Droid. Pete,
do you remember
help me, Pete.
Do you remember the Hartsfield-Jackson Airport voice in the train? Do you remember pre-1996 Olympics? It was a Cylon. It literally was a Cylon.
You have been delayed because someone has interfered with the closing of the doors.
Yeah, but it was much worse than that. It literally sounded like a Cylon, like somebody was going to hit you with a blaster in 5 seconds because you interfered with the closing of the doors. But let me get back to my True Grit story. Man, we went far afield. We like, And I'm not even reeling it. I'm just going.
I'm calling this one True Grit. I think that's the name of this podcast.
So the original True Grit wasn't bad. And I will say this, the two best characters in both the original and in the new one.
Were they the droids?
No, they were the little girl.
Yeah.
A little girl who's assertive in the Old West. That's a bizarre.
What's her name in the movie?
I don't know. John Wayne always called her little sister.
Yeah.
I don't remember the character. I don't remember the actors. The original actress was excellent. The young girl who was in...
Haley Stansfield is in the Coen Brothers remake.
Yeah. But here's what I like about the Coen Brothers remake is I think they talked like they did in the 19th century. Right?
Yeah. You know, sometimes you watch...
They would tell narrative stories.
Yeah, sometimes you watch a show or you watch a movie and you think, this is not... I remember once I saw a Robin Hood made-for-TV movie. And
was that Robin Hood Men in Tights?
No.
Not historically accurate.
No, it was not. But this one was mostly accurate. They tried. But, you know, the what is their name? Little John and his Merry Men?
Robin Hood and his Merry Men, and then Little John and the East Side Boys were the rappers that serenaded
them. So the East Side Boys jump out of the streets. No, so the bandits, the 12th century or whatever, don't write me any letters. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But these folks jump out of the... trees.
Gadzooks.
And they yell Geronimo.
Did they really? Yes, they have. Who didn't appear for hundreds and hundreds of years later. Which version was this?
It was just some jackass Robin Hood.
But this wasn't like movie. The one with Kevin Costner.
No. It was in the 80s. It was made for TV. It was, okay. My dad says, holy crap, that's terrible. And I didn't know. I'm like, what's terrible? Maybe it was a bad camera angle, but they just, no. And then he had to explain to me Geronimo was actually an Indian, and the whole yelling Geronimo when
but
you jump is a
you're allowed,
racist narrative to begin with that was created.
You're allowed some poetic license. So let's face
it. Post-Civil War.
Middle and Old English, we have to fix that because we wouldn't really understand it.
But the point of it, the style of it, and the concerns of it, like you were saying, they spoke in parable, right?
Yeah, and they spoke with this interesting older narrative approach. I think back to the movie with Kevin Costner and Morgan Freeman, you actually get a glimpse at the intelligence and the beauty of the society of the Moors. Right, we think of the Crusades as, well, them Christians went and whipped up on a bunch of them heathen Muslims.
The most unbelievable part of the Kevin Costner Robin Hood is the way that he grips Christian Slater when he says, "I have a brother." Spoiler alert.
Oh no, there were some silly things in the plot. The point is, though, they at least made an attempt to look at medieval Moorish Spain in a positive light. I mean, the Moors were a very advanced civilization, much more advanced than the Europeans, in my opinion.
That's why they put the character in the story.
Yeah, and so it didn't tell the complete story, but at least they made an attempt to do that. So that was good. But yeah, back in the new remake with Jeff Bridges and Matt Damon, they just spoke in interesting ways that I think was probably a little truer. I'm sure they take some poetic license with that as well. And it was nice. And you saw both their flaws and their good points. I did not much care for this gentleman. You know, that kind of thing. It's just like, yeah. And he was like a cowboy with a patch over his eye. There's nothing like more badass than either a pirate or a cowboy with a patch over their eye.
The ending was so surreal, too. It was actually kind of an extraordinary nightmare ending.
It was a little... Fargo-ish.
Is that how does the movie end with like the surreal nighttime ride and then, you know, half an arm and
It ends years later when the young woman who lost her arm as a result of that snake bite.
Okay, she does lose her arm.
Yeah, she comes.
This is in the original True Grit, which I've never seen because I'm not actually.
Well, this is in the remake.
Much of a fan.
No, in
of
the
John
in the
Wayne.
Original, I forget, and that's okay. He's a very. I keep saying he's a very one-dimensional character. I never met the man. He's probably fascinating.
The best thing about John
Wayne... The characters
Wayne,
he was forced to me, play were very one-dimensional.
Sure. But the best thing about John Wayne for me is the scene in the birdcage. Walk like John Wayne.
Oh, yeah. That okay. Was good. Yeah. He's an icon.
How was that?
He's an icon.
That was perfect.
Yeah.
I just never realized that John Wayne walked that way.
Was he talking to his butler who couldn't walk in shoes?
No. Nathan Lane and Robin Williams. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I've seen one John Wayne movie, and that was Rio Bravo.
It's an excellent film.
But that
for
was,
people that like the shoot 'em up bang bang.
That
genre.
Was made so that John Wayne and Howard Hawks could critique High Noon.
Really?
And this is the reason I'm thinking of that is because you said, uh-huh. you know, he didn't really have much choice. But near the end there, he had uh-huh. more autonomy.
Which one was Rio Bravo? There was Rio Bravo and Rio Lobo.
See, I never saw Rio Lobo.
What was Rio Bravo?
Rio Bravo is where he's the sheriff mm-hmm. and the town kind of bands together to help him out.
Okay.
As opposed to High Noon, which was about
with Gary Cooper.
Gary Cooper, yeah. No one would help him.
Yeah.
Rio Bravo had...
I like that.
I think Dean Martin played the drunk, much like One-Eyed Jacks.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. Dean Martin, actually, a very serious family man. We always portray him as a drunk. He did like to drink.
Portrayed himself as a drunk.
Yeah. That was his character.
John Wayne created the project and the character and the movie.
I did not know.
As a response to High Noon, because as he gained more autonomy as a star and as a person who had influence, his right-wing... sort of anti-communist rah-rah-rahness started mm-hmm. to come out more and more.
Oh, okay. But his final film, The Shootist, that starred Lauren Bacall and Jimmy Stewart, Harry Morgan, who played Colonel Potter on
Marriage,
was in it.
He's great. Was great.
Who else was going to...
God, all those people are dead now.
Richard Boone.
Lauren Bacall, just recently.
Just recently passed away. She was fabulous, but she played this very realistic character. She ran the boarding house where he stayed, and she lost her boarders because he was a notorious gunfighter, and they knew he was dying, and a lot of guys wanted to kill him because they wanted to be the guy that shot.
Oh, so everybody wanted to get out of the way of everybody who's coming to shoot
and,
the shootist.
And so, he felt bad, and they sort of kindled a bit of a friendship. It wasn't quite a romance, so it wasn't cheap gratuitous. It was just kind of nice. But the best line, I believe Jimmy Stewart was a good friend of John Wayne's, which maybe is why he agreed to participate in the project. He was his doctor, and I'll just never forget. He goes in and he does some tests, and he comes back after 30 minutes. I'm like, what test did you do? There were no medical diagnostics back in the 19th
century. I held
century.
The blood up to the sun to see what I could see
he
through it.
But I think, they poked you with a needle. And pathology, they poke you with a needle and look at it under a microscope. But now we have a lot of dyes and tests to tell whether or not you think the cells have cancer. I think it looks purple. That can't be good.
I love that your representative technology is dye.
Well, dyes isn't something to color a cell.
Oh, yeah. No,
based
I know what you're talking about. I'm just saying that I love that that's the
And he comes back in after these imaginary tests. So there was a little poetic
license. We can fill you with colored fluid.
You have a cancer. And I just never forget that. And, Jimmy Stewart tells him, a guy like you, I would make arrangements to end it early. And that's the story, that there's a big shootout at the end.
That's
and he goes down in a
line.
Blaze of glory. But I will tell you this. What made it a good film is that John Wayne, the son of the woman that ran the boarding house, played by Ron Howard. And let's face it, Ron Howard did, Opie Taylor on the Andy Griffith Show, and then he did Happy Days, and then he did nothing in between until he became one of Hollywood's most prolific directors.
Spielberg Jr.
But in between, he did this film where he was this young kid, and he took him out for a shooting lesson. He goes, I think his name was Brooks, was the name of the gunfighter. He goes, well, Mr. Brooks, my grouping isn't all that much different than yours. He goes, you're right, son, but imagine doing that when someone's shooting back at you. And he was very much against gunfighting. He said, violence is not the answer, and it's terrible now. You get this reputation, and every little kid wants to shoot you, and you have to shoot these people just to survive. And he had an interesting philosophy. It was something like, I don't believe in lying and cheating and laying hands upon another man, and I will not have the same done to me, or something like that. And I don't know why I'm saying that, like Mayor Quimby.
Yeah, that sounds like a very odd
but
sort
it,
of
it
homophobic
was just,
thing.
It was very realistic. He was reading a newspaper at the time, and he said, I've never read a newspaper from cover to cover, and I'm determined to finish this one.
So, Pete, in the very short time that we have left.
Really? What's wrong with me?
You have a cancer.
you said that like Christopher Walken, though. Let's get it like that. No, I would not want to get bad news from Christopher Walken. It would always sound depressing.
Dr. Pete, he's a scientist. He's got things in his head. He says he's a professor. He's a man with cancer. what did John Wayne teach you that you use in your science and engineering career, if anything?
Now you got to bring it back, don't you, Rant? So I have to relate the humanities to
science. I'd be happy to just drop a drum beat in here and save you if you'd like.
I guess I was just thinking about it on the human end. But I will say this, and this is something I'm learning with my GT1000 class now, is people think, well, okay, I'm in the business school, so I need to know how to market and network and deal with people and convince people that they need to buy something. And people in science think, well, the numbers will speak for themselves. No. Whether you need to get funding for something or help people understand simply that a technology will be beneficial to them, and they should look into it, and it might help them. And it might help them, you know, to diagnose cancer, but it also might help them to – what was one of the service learning projects that our CS people did? Interface mothers with young infants into whatever government programs that might help them with education and other facilities, you know, to make a kiosk for these things. The technology can help you. Technology can help us diagnose medical problems now. This is a big thing, telemedicine, things like that. You have to be a person and understand the narrative and the John Wayne movie and the way people act and talk, because you too will have to convince them of the significance of this, not just if you're a humanities major or a business major.
Do you feel good about that? Is that okay without a joke at the end?
I thought that was a joke.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.